friends. I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Ashley.
And we are so happy to have you here with us today.
We believe that everyone is an artist, and that's why we found a connection experiment.
Join us as we dig into some real talk where we discuss impactful questions, share music, reflect on performances, and connect with other musicians and artists to hear their story and to stay inspired.
Let's dig in.
Welcome in, everybody. Hi, I'm Ashley. We've got Stephanie here, and we've got Jay here. Welcome in. We're so excited to talk with all of you. Before we dive in, I just want to say hello and give you a little bit of a background of what Connection Experiment is if you haven't listened before. Stephanie and I founded Connection Experiment basically to promote like authenticity and vulnerability and kind of like discovering your true artist. For musicians, and really for all people, but especially for musicians. We are huge fans of Brené Brown. Jay and I were just talking about that before we hit record. And that's kind of some of the things that she talks about in her message about, you know, getting rid of perfectionism and being able to stand your sacred ground and be authentic and show up and be vulnerable, and that oftentimes that's where our superpower lies. And so Stephanie and I really like to try to spread that message when it comes to musicians and sharing music with others. It can be so difficult, because those of you that are musicians, we all are very familiar with the ways in which we do the opposite of those things. So welcome in. We're so excited to have you. And we can't wait to hear a little bit about Jay.
Yes. And I love Jay because I've gotten to work with him for the last few months now, because we work on the same amazing gig with Low Bar Corral. And if you haven't checked him out, you absolutely should. Their big thing is everybody can sing, which has been something that I've been writing into the sunset for the last 5 years as I've been exploring my own voice. And I love that I found a whole group of people that stands behind the same message. And Jay is a sound engineer for Low Bar and also has a really expansive musical history that I wanted to hear. And also I thought it might be interesting to hear from him because and he's going to explain this a little bit, but he had a vast amount of musical history and then for a period of time totally walked away from it and then came back again. And I've talked to so many musicians and students of mine, and also just like great musicians that I look up to and aspire to be like, who have had a season where they don't pursue music in any way and then come back to it. And I always love to hear about what came before, what caused the stop, and what came after. And so I'm really excited to hear a little bit from Jay, and I'll let Ashley initiate. But welcome, Jay. We're so excited to have you.
Thank you both very much.
Yeah, and Jay, I'm just meeting you for the first time, and I'm also equally excited to hear about your story. And, you know, this question that we have for you, I think actually kind of makes sense as opposed to us, you know, delving in and saying a lot about your bio. I think if you're okay with it, I'd love to kind of pose the question in a way that allows you to expand on as much of your story as you want to. You know, you can add what you want and leave out what you don't want to say, but we were curious how you got involved in the music scene as a musician and a sound engineer. And like Stephanie said, did anything ever pull you away from music in your life? And then what brought you back? And I'm sure we're going to get to hear a lot of your story, and we are here for it, and we're so excited. So if you want to answer that question, you know, kind of not geographically, chronologically, as a part of your story,
involved, yes.
We would love that. Awesome, thanks.
Sure. Well, again, thank you both so much for having me. And Stephanie, I have to add to the Mutual Admiration Society. You've been such an asset to the Low Bar Corral band and the Low Bar Corral community. I can't even say enough about it. You bring an incredible heart and inventiveness to your playing. We finally gotten to make you start singing, which took a little while, but we're really glad that you succumbed, because your voice is incredible as well. And you're a huge fan favorite, and we'll talk about this more later, I'm sure. But one of the things, of course, that's incredible about the Low Bar Corral is it's a real community. The band, the fans, the people who come to our shows, the people who participate in our virtual chorals from all over the country and all over the world. It's a real family, and it's really built over the years. And I think the key is, you know, Ben Landsverk, our leader, has very much the whole model, like you said, it's very participatory. So it's like you are the Low Bar Corral. And so we just like Brené Brown talks about, when you're authentic, when you're vulnerable, when you can sing and you know it's okay if you sing a wrong note. You know nobody's going to wag their finger at you. They're not going to, you know, look at you nasty if you didn't show up last week or you didn't remember the part or whatever. No, but none of that happens. And so because we can be authentic, we can be vulnerable, we can be afraid to make mistakes, we create these really authentic connections. And in the pandemic, when we couldn't sing in person, like for well over a year, and even after that, it was by fits and starts, our community hung together, and because we had these strong connections that were forged by that wonderfully creative, vulnerable, fun experience. So, and you fit right in so well with that, and I just, we love your energy. So thank you so much for being part of our Low Bar Chorale family. So when you were talking about how I stopped doing music for a while, I realized that in a way, not really, but in a way, I stopped being a musician. I know what time you were talking about. There was a big time where I didn't play music, I didn't do sound, I didn't do anything. But there was another time when I stopped being a musician for quite a while. The first part of my musical life started in high school when I just learned to start guitar lessons when I was 11, and I would just play in bands or just do whatever I could get anybody to do. I did a lot of singer-songwriter stuff. I was really into Neil Young. I had a 12-string Martin that I saved up all my pennies for back when that was enough to actually get a 12-string Martin. But then I came to Portland. I grew up in San Diego. I came to Portland to go to Reed College. But then in the fall of my freshman year, a couple of friends of mine who were going to college at University of California, Berkeley, well, let's just say I decided to make a change in plans. And so I took the second semester of my freshman year off. Everybody thought, oh, no, Jay's dropping out. Jay's never going to go back to college. And I'm like, no, I'm just going to go hang out with my friends and we're going to do music. And so I came down to Berkeley and I worked as a dishwasher and I busked and I did all kinds of, I sold plasma, did cons, you know, all kinds of things that, that poor artists sort of do sometimes. But we made music, and the three of us, it was myself and these two friends, Amy and Julie, that I went to high school with. And we all did these, we did these three-part harmony arrangements, some that had all been written. We did a lot of Crosby, Stills, Nash, things like that. But we also did other stuff and created harmony arrangements for songs that didn't have them. And our little brush with greatness, claim to fame, on their dorm room floor in one of those high-rise dorms that they have in Berkeley, was a guy with big curly red hair named Rob. And Rob was a really good guitar player and a really good singer, and he'd play in our band sometimes. He wouldn't really want to share any of his original songs too much, but if we had a good gig, he'd come along. And so that was great. We got four voices, we got two guitars along with Amy's piano and stuff, and that was just really, really nice. Well, fast forward a few decades, and Rob goes on to co-found a little band called Train. And you might have heard that song, Drops of Jupiter, with the piano intro. Well, that's Rob, the guitar player, on his not normal instrument, being quite vulnerable in front of the Grammy, you know, live television audience. He talked about it later, how he was scared out of his wits because piano is not his normal thing.
Wow.
Rob got it back then and got a Grammy for it. So, but of course, we didn't know that at the time. We didn't, you know, never know what people are going to go on to do. But the funny thing is that about the Berkeley experiences, besides doing all those harmonies and really learning harmony singing, which, you know, comes back around 40 years later or so with the Low Bar Chorale, we fall in with a bunch of people who do sound and do concert productions. They were essentially the whole crew that was left over when a band broke up. So there was a manager, there was a light guy, there was a sound guy, there was somebody who just sold merch, and they were a whole family. They all lived in the same house. It was very hippie-ish. And so they were Madman Productions. They put on concerts. So I learned to do sound from them. And when I came back to Reed, I kept doing it. But at a certain point, and this is where that sort of self-image and perfectionism thing comes in, I sort of thought, you know, I mean, I humbly, but I will say, one of probably the best musical body part that I have are my ears. I can hear really well. I can hear when something's wrong. I can't necessarily play it correctly, but I can hear it. And that kind of became a double-edged sword, because as working with a lot of talented musicians as a sound person, I was like, damn, those people are really good. I'm not nearly that good. And when I try to be good, when I tried to do music, I couldn't satisfy my ear. I could hear, no, that's not really right. And, oh, then, no, that's not really right. No, I don't know. I don't like that. And so I ultimately decided that I could add more value helping better, quote unquote, musicians get their music across through recording and through sound than by playing my own music. And so I made a very conscious decision to sort of put my musical interest and advocacy in, and talents into that side of the thing. And so I literally stopped playing music right around my senior year of college and didn't seriously pick it up for about 15 years almost.
Did you miss it when you stopped and totally just decided to be a sound engineer?
Sometimes. Most of the time I was with a lot of really good musicians. I married a really good musician and that helped. So we, you know, my first wife, who died of breast cancer in 2010, her name is Julie Jones, and she had been in a number of bands. She joined a band that I was doing sound for and really impressed everybody in the band because she had her very first gig and there was like 20 original songs. And at the break, this was up in Seattle, and we were like, you didn't screw up once. But she had her own bands and her own thing, and we knew each other casually in the music scene for several years. And she eventually started a band with two keyboard players, a drummer who sang lead vocals, and a guitar player. And sometimes she would come out in front and say, play bass. And so there was, and she and the other keyboard player also sang backing vocals. So there was a lot going on. She was like, I really need a sound person who can really learn this stuff and figure out who's doing the solo and who's doing the bass and just what the heck's going on, because it's not normal. And so we got to know each other that way. And then we fell in love, and so we made records together and all of that. And that was a lot of fun. And I think that got a lot of my, you know, musical yearnings and desires out. You know, it was very participatory. We would, you know, reach for the same knob at the mixing board at the same time. It's like, oh, that needs a little more of this or a little less of that or whatever it was. And that was really fun to have that teamwork and that partnership. But at the same time, you know, I was always sort of aware of this, like, well, she's the artist, you know, and I'm the engineer / co-producer, and I had a say, but ultimately it was her songs, her keyboard parts, her voice, her name on the marquee. You know, when she started a solo band, we called it Julie Jones and the Things You Are, after that old standard song, All the Things You Are. And so it was very satisfying, but it was also, especially looking back, there was that sort of little sense of something being missing, which leads up to how I crossed over, which was that we had the hardest time getting musicians for the longest time, because it was difficult, complex, pseudo-progressive, jazz-ish, funk, rock, heavy on keyboards in the 90s when that was not cool. And so this was not, nobody's going to get rich or famous. Nobody was going to get paid, honestly. This was, come learn our songs and play music with us because you like it. And so we went through all, but you had to be pretty darn good because it was complicated stuff and you couldn't just wing it. So we went through a lot of musicians, and after one really full of himself bass player, you know, said that something couldn't be played, you know, who hadn't learned the stuff, but then, no, you can't play that. And I was like, and he storms off in a huff. And Julie had been a bass player and had a bass. I'm like, give me that thing. It can't be that hard. And so I started screwing around on the bass. And the band starts saying, hey, stop teasing us. Are you actually going to do this or not? And I was like, well, I don't really know if I can. I've never played bass before. And I literally had never played bass before. But I knew how the music was supposed to go. We had taught so many musicians. We had recorded it. And so ultimately, I took Julie's bass with us on a sort of a little road trip that she did for work. And while she was off working, I was stuck in the hotel room. And I was like, okay, I'm going to learn the hardest songs. And then I sort of auditioned that song for the band, and they were like, well, will you? And I'm like, will you have me? And they were like, heck yeah. And so I'm like, great, okay, now I have to buy a 5-string. So it was lots of low B stuff. And I was like, great, that'll be easy. Not. But still, I was surprised and I was impressed, and it helped my ego and my confidence how far knowing how the music was supposed to sound carried me. Right? Because I've never read music. I've never done scales. I've never, other than 1 year of piano lessons when I was in first grade, there was none of that. So I never had, you know, the discipline of what I call, quote unquote, real musicians who practice and who learn scales and who know theory and say, and I mean, I marvel at the low bar band, Stephanie, when Ben says, oh, wait, no, this is in A flat, not an A. And all the musicians are like, oh, okay. I mean, are you effing kidding me? That blows my mind. I would just be like, well, I'm out.
Well, and I think that's the thing that's so interesting too, is that, you know, we think that there is like this way a musician should be trained or a way a musician should sound in order to proudly be who they are in the music world. And kind of to your earlier point of saying, you know, like, oh, it was difficult because the sounds I was creating weren't matching up with my ear. And I think a lot of the time, like, that's sort of like the journey of getting to know ourselves. You know, I mean, sometimes we're lucky and we really like something about ourselves, and we can really just ride that into the sunset and say, hey, this is really great that I feel confident in this one area. But there are so many areas that we don't feel confident with that we have to exercise that muscle of self-acceptance and say, well, this is though how I sound, you know. And I have to question, do you think that Tom Waits or Bob Dylan or, you know, Bjork, did you, I mean, these are kind of, to me, these musicians that are amazing, but maybe not like in, and I, honestly, I'm going to ex Bjork out of it because I have not heard a lot of her music. I don't know why, but anyway.
But she's awesome, but she's not the kind of person that you think of as a quote unquote like good singer.
Right, whatever that even means.
Whatever that might even means, but you're right. You're right. People say, oh, that's a weird sounding voice. That's not a normal sounding voice. Ew.
Exactly. And I think it's the same thing with piano too. It's like you'll create sounds and you're like, I don't know if I like how this sounds because I think it should sound this other way. And I think we really dismiss so much of our own unique potential when we say, just because we don't sound like what we think we should sound like, maybe there's more exploring than just deciding that you should either A, try to sound like what you think you should sound like, or B, just walk away from it and do the thing that you're good at. And I think that my whole life, I've kind of tried to prove that myth wrong, that like you either have it or you don't. I mean, that was my journey with the piano, and it's been my journey with running. You know, I would drop out of races when I was young, and then and now I have run several marathons, and I'm about to run around Mount St. Helens next Friday. And so it's like, I think anybody, but people said, hey, you know, you should be throwing a discus. You really look like you should be, you know, throwing things rather than running. And I mean, people really, they like to insert their expectations on you based off of what they think you should be. And I think that what's so important with music is that we defy the shoulds and we dig into how do we personally become better, you know, and how do we personally grow that muscle of like, well, what do I have to offer the musical world? And it doesn't have to sound like everybody else, you know? And so to your point of like kind of coming back around and like the serendipity of, you know, picking up the bass and actually being the perfect fit, you know, I think that that's a really cool way to sort of get back into exploring not only how do you support musicians, but how do you also embrace your own musicianship?
Definitely.
Love that. I also just wanted to say, I chuckled a little bit when you were saying like, oh, but I'm not like a real musician, because I know we talked about this on another episode, and I mean, we talk about this a lot, but I know there's going to be so many people that are listening that are like, you know, just starting out learning how to play the piano, or have been learning for a year, or have been learning for a couple of years. And it doesn't matter where you are. Like, I'm sitting here listening to your story and I'm like, wow, this is an incredible story. You're this accomplished musician. You've done all of these things. You've worked with all of these people. And then to hear you say like, oh, but I'm not a real musician. And it's just so humanizing. And I think when we can remember that, like, everybody has that imposter syndrome at times, like, it doesn't matter what level you reach to the external world, or even really what level you reach, you know, inside your own world of like, thinking you need to go this far, thinking you need to check this thing off the list to be a real musician or to be a good musician, or what, you know, those boxes that we put ourselves into. But just accepting that like music is a part of your life. Music has been a part of your life, it sounds like, almost forever. And that alone like gives you that title of musician, and none of that other stuff really matters. Even though we all get so caught up, like I love Low Bar Corral's message. I always preface like, I mean, I sing, but I'm not a singer, which is just funny because I preach this message all day, every day. Like, if you play the piano, you're a pianist. But then I do the exact same thing with singing. So anyway, I just chuckled a little bit and wanted to draw people's attention to that because we all struggle with that.
Well, right. And the interesting thing is, so Stephanie, you asked about the time, the main time when I stopped doing music. And the reasons were myriad. There was practical reasons. Julie and I moved. And so the studio that we had set up in our basement with her first full-length solo record, she did an EP in 1994, but this was 1999. And we had been working on a full-length record with our first real solid band that we had really ever had. Wonderful team of musicians. And including myself on bass. And we were about 2 years into recording, and we literally, you know, sold our house, packed everything up, moved, remodeled, did all this stuff. We had grand plans. We moved. It was out in the country. We had grand plans to turn a barn into a big studio where we would, instead of being stuck in our basement, we would have windows and we look out in the country and be all inspired. And it was going to be beautiful. But, you know, life has a way of getting in the way. We had health problems. We had job loss problems. We had all kinds of things come up. We had kids. We had more kids. We had just all kinds of issues came up, and one thing led to another. And we really didn't do anything for years. And then she got sick with cancer, and then she died. And the beauty, in a way, of the situation is that all her parts have been recorded, and almost all of everybody else's parts in the band were recorded. Interestingly enough, only about half the bass parts were, because I was like, you know, I was sort of like the cobbler's, you know, kids, not having, it was like, well, I'm the engineer, I can always record my bass parts. So there's just scratch parts that people played along to. But then I didn't play for years and years and years. And I go back and I try to play this stuff, and I'm like, uh-oh. So, long story short, we're gonna finish the record. This is 10 years on, but trust me, it is going to happen. We're gonna finish this record. One of our bass players, who was absolutely fabulous on Julie's first EP, Brian Casey, he's now a professor of jazz bass performance in Colorado. He's Brian Casey. He's amazing. He's a master, and he's offered to pinch it on the tracks that of mine that aren't gonna quite cut the mustard. So that's gonna be really a wonderful collaboration. But so for about, you know, 15 years then, after she died and until 2016, you know, I really didn't do anything. Sold my guitar, listened to music, but loved seeing bands, but never really, and, you know, I still had some of my musician friends, but never really did anything. And then Alan Hunter, who he played with, so Michael and Renee Jarmer are known as Here Comes Everybody. They were in a band with Julie, the first band that I really worked on with her on, called Jane His Wife. This was 1988. Well, when they were Here Comes Everybody, both before and after that, one of their bass players for the longest time was Alan Hunter. So I've really known Alan for almost 40 years, which is scary. But he posted on Facebook, hey, we're doing this sing-along thing. Everybody can sing, and we're going to do The Cure. And I'm like, I know those songs backward and forward. How hard could it be? So it was literally this lowest barrier to entry possible. I don't even have to look at the words. I trust Alan. Alan's cool. I'll just show up. If it's lame, so it's one evening that I lose out of my life. No big deal, but it might be fun. But thanks to Ben and Alan and the whole operation, and Kate Sokoloff, who co-founded Low Bar Corral, it was my gateway drug, because, again, with no barrier to entry, I didn't have to be good. I didn't have to be a pro. I hadn't done sound. I hadn't played guitar. I hadn't sung for 15 years. It didn't matter. It didn't matter. And this was like this absolutely mind-blowing revelation. I could go sing music, and it didn't matter. That I couldn't measure up to what I used to be like, to what I used to do. Even that wasn't maybe good enough as I had thought it should be, or any of that. None of that mattered. Because there were all these people who had never sung, or who'd only sung in the shower, or couldn't keep couldn't hold a note, and it didn't matter. We all had this greatest time. And so, of course, in my typical fashion, I tend to, like, when I find something I really like, you know, like Julie playing cool music, I'm like, ooh, how can I help? Or Ben is doing this Low Bar Corral thing, I'm like, wow, this is great. How can I get more of this? How can I help? How can I be a part of this? And so it kind of all went on from there. But the thing that was fascinating is, beside me helping out with the Low Bar Corral, I've just been like, give me more. So after a couple of years, somebody I knew from Low Bar Corral came up to me and said, hey, I'm not really... I feel lost. You know, Ben teaches these parts, and I feel like I need more teaching. Would he actually teach us a class, you know, with a group of people, a class in harmony singing? I was like, well, let's go ask him. And so we did, and that started what's called now called the So-So Singers, which we meet with Ben every other week. We've done this for 4 years or so now, and we do some pretty complex four-part harmony arrangements. We have about 10 or a dozen people, and you know, some amazing things have come out of that. Catherine Clare, who many of you know, has been a guest artist with Low Bar Corral, and Alan Hunter is in her band. Absolutely wonderful, amazing musician. Invited several people of the So-So Singers and from the Low Bar Corral into the studio to sing on her last record. And that was my first time singing on anybody's recording, including my own wife's, for 20 years. And it was amazing. And then she recorded the entire Low Bar Corral up in the Assembly Lounge at Rev Hall, singing on one of her songs. All of that made it on the record. And then she invited the So-So Singers to come up on stage with her when she debuted her album in February of 2020 at the Old Church. It was my first time actually on stage performing, other than Check 1-2 on a microphone, for I don't even want to say how long. And so it was incredibly transformative. I sang the Reed College Community Chorus. I'm learning to read music. I sang Mozart my very first semester. That was scary as beep, but it was really, really fun. And I was like, damn, I can do this. This is really fun.
This is such an amazing story. And I think too, like, you know, as we're wrapping up here, just like, you are such an inspiration for so many people, regardless of their level. And I guess if there was one thing that you could tell somebody who either, regardless of their level, because I've honestly had this conversation with somebody, like people who are very, very accomplished touring internationally, musicians, and then people who have never played an instrument in their life. Just like in a couple sentences or two, you know, could you share what your mantra is now as to like why music matters and why everybody should dig into their authentic musical voice?
There's a lot of reasons, but I think the reason that means the most to me now, especially in sort of the wake of this ongoing disruption of the pandemic and Donald Trump and so many things, climate change, so many things that are falling apart all around us, music brings people together. And creating music creates those connections. I mean, it's one thing to be the audience at a big show. There's a certain amount of togetherness with that while you're, you know, screaming fans of your wonderful artists. But when you're making music with people, even if you're just singing and Ben's teaching and you don't really think you know what you're doing, that is a community and a connection. And those connections last. I now have more deep, solid, call them at 3 a.m. when you're in trouble, or else you'll be in much bigger trouble the next day, friends, than I've ever had in my life. And it's all because of the Low Bar Corral and all of the things that have come out of it and the connections that I've made doing stuff that, you know, before I started doing it in 2016, I was like, well, I'm not really that good.
Yep. I think that's incredible. And it's like, what's so wonderful about all this is that it is about community and connection and really embracing that, which I love. So thank you for sharing, Jay. And it's just been such a joy to chat with you. Ashley, is there anything you want to say before we wrap up?
Yeah. Thanks, Jay. I feel so honored to have heard your story, what you shared of your story with us. It was really, really, really wonderful to hear. And I am curious for listeners, you know, if people want to get in touch with you about anything that you're doing with sound engineering or Low Bar Corral, you know, is there a preferred way that they could do that?
You know, I'm really, as a marketing professional, which I do in my day job, I'm really also terrible at promoting myself. I'm working on a website for my video and audio production work that I've been doing for the last several years. But no, probably the best way would just be to go to lowbarcorral.com and contact the team there. I'm one of the crew, and that's the best way. Or just come by the show bar every other Tuesday, starting tomorrow.
Cool.
In fact,
and sing. You mentioned virtually people can do that too. So if they go to the Low Bar Corral website, then they can find that information on how to attend virtually too.
Yes. So we have a lot of videos of folks singing in person on our YouTube channel, and there are links to those from our website, as well as the virtual chorales we've done. We don't currently have a virtual chorale project in the works, but we will start another one probably, you know, I wouldn't be surprised in the next couple months. The last one that we did was Time After Time with Cindy Lauper, and it was super, super fun. So I know we're going to do another one soon.
Yeah, definitely.
Awesome. Just for the people that aren't in Portland.
Yeah, and we will, these are a couple weeks out. So once we actually release this, I'm going to ask Ben if he'd be willing to share this with the whole Lobar Corral, and kind of just to give a great big nod and thank you to you, Jay, for everything that you do for the community, and also spread this message to a community who obviously already gets behind the idea that everyone's an artist and everybody is a musician. It's just a matter of tapping into what you already have and becoming your own personal best. So I love that that's a community that fosters that message, and that's why we were super excited to talk with you today. So thank you so much, Jay. We have so loved chatting with you. And
Thank you.
For those of you that are listening and want more of this, screenshot this, post it on your social media, and look up Jay Cosnett, who's amazing. Check out the Lobar Corral, and check out Connection Experiment courses, because we teach classes all about this message of finding your own personal musical voice, embracing it, and making musical choices that resonate with your personal truth. So check us out, and we'll hope to talk to you soon.
Yep. Thanks so much.
We are so grateful for you. Thank you for spending your time with us today.
Our podcast is inspired by people like you.
If you're looking to dig deep and discover your authentic artist, then join us today by visiting our website, connectionexperiment.com.